Do you have a tricky work problem that you need to solve? I have a great podcast recommendation for you featuring a pair of expert women. Whether you're just starting your career or a seasoned professional, check out Fixable, a podcast from TED. Hosted by Harvard professor Frances Fry and her wife, leadership coach Ann Morris, the brilliant duo provide honest, actionable advice to help you navigate everything from a gaslighting manager to returning to work after parental leave. They'll leave you feeling empowered and ready to act. Listen to Fixable wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, and welcome to the Bossed Up Podcast, episode 338. I'm your host, Emily Aries, the founder and CEO of Bossed Up. And today I have such an awesome interview for you. I'm really delighted to be speaking with Janine K. Brown, who is an author of the highly anticipated book, Unstuck and Unstoppable, 6 Proven Strategies to Leverage Your Value, Increase Your Visibility, and Gain Recognition to Accelerate Your Career. I'm going to tell you more about her in just a moment, but she is such a boss with so much wisdom to share. And today's podcast is really effective for those who find themselves on the precipice of growth. So if you're thinking, I might be getting a little comfortable. I might be getting a little complacent. I'm curious about what's next for me. I have more ambition than I know what to do with. You're going to find today's conversation enlightening. But if you're also someone who just prides themselves on being a really effective tactician, the person who slays their to-do list every day, who feels like they've got this whole perfect, perform, and please thing down, I also want to challenge you to really listen to what Janine and I have to say today, because I think there is pride in mastering your role and staying within your comfort zone that can be really detrimental to long-term growth potential. And so it's actually an act of courage to challenge yourself to do more. Now, if you're coming to this podcast exhausted or depleted, take this day off. This might not be the right one for you. This is more of a motivational kick in the pants. So if you're finding yourself burnt out, depleted, exhausted, trying to still recover and just get your stuff together, go read my book. That's the book for you. But if you're beyond that, or you've been through the ringer on that front already, I think you're going to find this conversation really enlightening in clarifying, okay, how do I figure out what's next? Because getting unstuck is difficult, but it is a path that is well-worn by many, many women who've come before you. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Janine. She's the managing director and founder of the National Talent Development and Diversity Consultancy firm, Everyday Lead, which is headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia. Janine's a thought leader and active advocate for advancing the number of women and Black professionals into fulfilling careers and executive leadership roles. She's results-oriented with a true passion for people, and she leads a team that works closely with clients delivering solutions to assist corporations increasing their retention, decreasing attrition, attracting new talent, and creating competitive advantages through the power of inclusion. She's led large teams with a successful career at Deloitte and in multiple other industries. And her solutions have helped clients expand their networks, leverage their skills to create value, increase compensation, and truly get results. With her clients reporting increased confidence, expanded influence, and clear and focused performance goals. Janine got her start getting her Bachelor of Science in Accounting from Alabama State University and her Master of Business Administration from Robinson College at Georgia State University. She completed her training as a professional coach at the Institute of Professional Excellence in Coaching, IPEC, and she's active in many professional associations and serves as a leader on many boards of directors. Whew, there's a lot to Janine, and I can't wait to hear what you all think about our conversation because I thoroughly enjoyed having it. Without further ado, let's welcome Janine K. Brown to the Bossed Up Podcast. So glad to have you here, Janine.
Thank you so much for having me. I am excited to be here with you today.
Yeah, I am excited to be chatting with you, especially as someone who knows so much about leadership and navigating the climb and helping others to do the same. I know lots of women in our community here at Bossed Up are going to love hearing from you. So first, give us a little background. How did you find yourself in this role as a speaker, author, productivity coach, and the boss behind EverydayLead.com?
So I'm going to start off by saying, listen to what other people say about you. And that's how I ended up finding myself. But it took me 10 years from the first time someone said something to me about this. So for the first 17 years of my career, and that includes some internships because I'm not that old. I studied accounting and finance when I was in college, and I went into straight into doing consulting in that space, and primarily in tax. And I did that. I loved what I was doing. I worked both in state government and then quickly went into public accounting. So I worked at Deloitte for many years and stayed in public accounting for about 6.5, almost 7 years before I launched out on my own. So I was fully committed. I was a hiring manager, very young, moved up really quickly, but never thought about the natural abilities and talents I had to help others excel and to be able to lead teams that were effective and high performing, and also just insight that I think I got from my grandmother to end up doing coaching.
Oh, yeah? What's the story there?
My grandma, everybody loved my grandmother, but she had an ability that I think I inherited of being able to help people tap into their natural skills and talents and to soar. And it wasn't until like a couple of 360 reviews in the workplace and then recognizing a lot of people who I had worked with in the past or worked for me, you know, I'll put "for me" in air quotes, would still stick around even after they were no longer on my team, no longer at the same company. They were managing their own teams. They were in large roles somewhere else. And they would call and was like, "Hey, I got this issue on my team." And the same thing would happen with my clients. Like, "Hey, can I talk to you about one of my employees?" I'm like, I don't do HR consulting. I'm here to help you guys do some state tax planning. And that's what I'm here for. And like I said, listen to what people say. Yeah. And then before I knew it, I was looking for something new to do, kind of wasn't enjoying the work I was doing before. And one of my mentors and other people was like, "Have you ever thought about being an executive coach?" And I had never thought about it. However, when I was at Deloitte, I was brought in, someone asked me to come down to HR, and that's what they asked me to do. And I said, no.
You resisted it.
I did, but I resisted it because my mentors told me that was not the place to be. But all my mentors were men. So they didn't respect HR. They specifically like, "Jeanine, this is where the deals are being made over here. This is where the business is. And we see you being a partner in our firm. And that's exactly the blessing that you want to have in my profession, right? You want the leaders of your organization to say, we want you here. And this is the role that we see that's best suited for you, which is also best suited for them."
Right. Interesting. So when you're rising quickly, clearly making an impact, standing out, you're starting to get feedback on what the right next step is for you, right? A lot of my clients feel that happens to them as well, especially the high potential women leaders on the rise. You start getting other people who say, "No, no, 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 don't go down that road. Come on this road. This road's much better. We want you here." How do you parse through the feedback you get? You know, listen to people, yes, but also listen to that vision you have for your career. How do you balance the two?
It's difficult. And I think it's difficult for us specifically because as women, and I'm going to be very, this is a gender bias, but I do see it often with my clients. We don't want to upset our mentors. We don't want to disappoint them because they see this in us. But I said we have to be clearly in tune with the direction that we want to see our careers go. And I always tell people and tell women, think about your future. Right. Don't think about the future that other people are painting for you. What do you see for yourself in the future? Are you dreaming big enough for yourself? And I think if we see the dream and the end game for ourselves, even if we say the end game 5 years from now, how do I get there? Then it's easier to resist or to say to your mentor, that is a great place for me to be, but I like that and this.
Right.
Can I get both? How can I get those things that you say are very valuable in this organization, but also what's important to me?
It's interesting. I think so many of us who are recovering from an academic sort of mindset, which is there is a right answer out there. If I just work hard, study hard, listen carefully, ask the right questions, I will figure out the right answers to this puzzle. And that is not at all how careers work, right? That's not how life works. There's multiple right answers for multiple kinds of people. And so I remember writing in my book, I wrote something along the lines, sometimes to make yourself proud, you have to risk disappointing others because there's lots of right ways to do this. There's lots of ways to win. So when you pivoted towards executive coaching, what did that look like for you?
So when I decided, I did it because I think a lot of it is because every move I made, I got super educated about it. Right, so that was the same thing with executive coaching. However, I had been coaching people for years in their careers, but I decided I wanted to go back. I'll get trained and earn a certification in the space. And so that's kind of how I did it. And at first I was like, ooh, I don't know if this is exactly what I should have done. But I embraced it. And I realized that this was almost like a higher calling for me because I moved up really quickly in my career. I was managing a team and had an assistant and client facing at 27.
Wow.
And I know a lot of women are doing that now, even younger than I did. But when I was coming up, you didn't see women. You definitely didn't see Black women doing that sort of thing. And I was always, always, always the youngest in the room, the only woman in the room. And the only Black woman in the room. And let me add, the only woman from the Midwest in the room, because I started my career in the South. So I think for me, it was like, okay, I can help women be explosive in their careers, increase their confidence, expand their networks, be more productive and get more work done faster and understand how to prioritize and exceed their potential. And that's really when I said, okay, this is what I can do. And then who are my clients? And I found that a lot of my clients are women and they are high performers. Some of them are even stuck though. You can be a high performer and be a little stuck and they just need a plan to move forward.
Do you think that the kind of outlier that you were in work at such a young age is... First of all, it's not something we want to be so exceptional, right? We want to see many, many more women, especially women of color, doing what you've done. Mm-hmm. But do you think that skill set can be taught? Or is it one of those things like your grandmother had it, you've got it, you were born with it, and you just attract that kind of response in people?
I think it's both, but I think it's how fast you move in it. So if you have a natural inclination to be a great leader, to galvanize support from other people, to lead others, you're going to do it better and faster, right? You're going to, and you're going to be naturally recognized for it, but you also might burn out too. But
don't I know it? Yeah, right? Don't I know it?
But I do think it can be taught.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I always hesitate to ask the question even, but I think it's an important one because I think I hear from a lot of women who think, I'm just not a natural born leader, and therefore this is the end point for my career, or this is the end point for my ability to ascend here. Yeah. And what I see in our leadership programs is there is a mindset shift when it comes to just doing your job well. Right? Mm-hmm. Performing, perfecting, and pleasing versus the kind of critical analysis of strategic thinking, outside the box thinking, putting forth bold ideas, you know, galvanizing, to borrow your term, which I love, galvanizing support from others, empowering others to lead. That really, it's a totally different skill set that we're not really often taught even in school.
Right.
And And I'm wondering, what are some of the most powerful lessons you've learned about shifting from being a good performer to being a leader that you want women to know?
Well, the first thing, you know, performance is not enough. Right? Mm-hmm. And if you still think that I'm going to do good work and I'm going to get recognized for it, I'm going to just say shame on you. That's not enough, because good work just gets you more work. Mm-hmm. So you have to shift your mindset around that. And I think even as an individual contributor, you still have to have great leadership skills. And so I think if women, you pick those skills, right? You look at the organization and see what is rewarded around here, around leadership. Mm. Look in your, and you don't have to do it like Bob does it.
Right.
Bring your own unique style, your own unique personality style to those skill sets of what's being rewarded. Right. Mm. So I tell clients, like, I have a lot of clients like, oh, I just want to make sure I'm mentoring other people. And I love mentoring. But if mentoring is not being rewarded,
right,
don't put all of don't put it in your bucket. Don't put so much of it in your bucket. Yeah. If being helpful is not being rewarded, don't be a helper. You
got to
be strategic.
Real.
Because if you see that the people are being rewarded because they're and they're using language like, oh, she or he is a visionary. They're innovative. Mm-hmm. They're strategic. They bring great ideas to the table, but they're not saying, oh, they were so helpful. They stayed late and they helped us get ready for this event tomorrow.
Right. Yes, exactly.
And I read a study recently, and I actually shared it with one of my clients this morning, is that men who help, who mm-hmm. stay late to help with, mm-hmm. and you may have heard this before.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, go for it.
They who stay and are helpers and help out for, say, an event that's coming up or they've demonstrated some helpful skills, they will get 14% higher rating in their performance. Mm-hmm. Women who do the same thing get 0%.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So I think that's the thing. We have to move from, we have to see what's being rewarded in our organizations, adapt those skills and those attributes so that we can be effective in the same language.
It's
about us.
You know, at the risk of sounding cynical about it, we're saying to be strategic because you've got limited time and energy and attention, right? Like if all those things were limitless, if we had all the time in the world, of course we'd want to always be mentoring, always be helpful.
Oh, yeah.
But if your time and resources are limited and you're looking to rise in your career, we've got to direct that limited time, energy, and attention towards the actual traits and demonstrating the traits that we see get rewarded in the way that we want
exactly.
to get rewarded.
And if you're going to be helpful, if we use the word helpful, if you're going to be helpful and say you volunteer to lead something or to take on an additional responsibility in your organization, you better leverage that in mm-hmm. a way that is strategic, right? Mm-hmm. You need to speak about it from the standpoint of what value that you create for the organization that aligns with what's rewarded in your organization. So let's give a specific example. If you say, okay, I want to volunteer to be a part of our women's leadership mm-hmm. Employee resource group. That is great. And I want everybody to do that. But you have to recognize by doing that, you should be building and developing some really strong leadership skills. Mm-hmm. And you add that into the conversation about the value that you're bringing to the company in the role, in that volunteer role that you are not being asked to pay for. Because if you don't, it'll be used against you.
What do you mean by that?
So you could end up working for someone who doesn't value this extracurricular activity that you're doing.
Yes.
And they feel as if you are spending time away from what they need you to do.
Mm-hmm. Like it's a liability instead
of an
asset.
It is a liability.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I give you 45, 50 hours of work to do. And I'm sure that I'm like, are you using my time to put this event together? So, and I think that's a mistake that a lot of us make, is that we're not communicating that, hey, by me volunteering in recruiting, by me volunteering in our diversity and equity inclusion initiatives, these are the skills that I've developed. This is the value that I'm bringing. This is how it's helping me in this current role, so that you're continuing to leverage it. And you and people see it as a leadership attribute.
Yes. And importantly, this is how it's helping the company.
The company. Exactly.
Right? The bottom line. And if you're working at a place where the people you see being rewarded, the traits you see being rewarded are not people or traits that you value or you agree with, then we're not saying, right, to compromise your character. We're saying that's not the right place for you.
That's exactly right. That's not right? the right place.
Yeah. How do you counsel women of color in particular in navigating this? Because obviously we have a huge gender leadership gap across the board. But especially, this is especially true for women of color who are just not seeing equal rates of promotion, even at that first promotion level into management, the numbers are abysmal. So when dealing with systemic issues, systemic racism, white supremacy, unconscious bias, microaggressions, what are women of color leaders to do in navigating that?
I think the first thing is you have to find an organization that, kind of going back what you just said, that aligns with your core values. Mm-hmm. I think there are some people who are built to stay to create change. And then there's some of us who are just not. yeah. If it's going to negatively impact your well-being, girl, get out of there.
Yes.
That's the first thing I tell my clients. Yeah. If I am coaching women who are dealing with all of those things that you listed related to a systemic issue in their organizations, and they're coming to every call and they're crying and they feel deflated and they're doing good work and not being recognized, sometimes we have to have a real conversation because there's some amazing organizations out here that would love to have you.
Right.
So I think that's the first thing. You are not stuck, and doesn't mean you have to stay there. And what we find is what happens is they love what they are doing.
Right.
They're skilled at it. So I think that's the first thing I would say.
And it is a shame that it's like, I love what I'm doing. I'm good at what I'm doing. The culture here makes it impossible for me to sustain myself. That's a business loss, but it's also just, it's a shame that it's, you know, I have to leave this. And the sort of onus is on the person who is not being included to draw that boundary and say, yeah, I'm going to go elsewhere. That's frustrating. Yeah.
And then I think the second thing is you have to find an aware leader internally in the organization and bring to their attention the challenges that you're having, but also bringing to them the attention of what happens when people find out about this outside of our organization, right? Mm-hmm. If, you know, Boeing fired 65 employees. Those were the 65 that they reported for creating, you know, a bad work culture. And other organizations are starting to do this now. And so I think, you know, although, you know, women of color have hurdles that they have to overcome, unfortunately, someone has to be the martyr. And I hate to use that term, but someone who's willing to fight the good fight. When I use the word martyr. But I think the other part is we have to own our well-being around how we're going to navigate our careers. And I can give another example. I have a client, similar situation. She works in a technology organization, a company almost so many people want to work for. And it's not, some of it is company culture. Some of it is, you know, just leadership. Organizations and some people in the organizations have adapted just bad behavior, but it's modeled throughout their career. So they do, like what you said, they do what others have done and been rewarded for it.
Right.
And she had a sponsor in the organization who happens to be another woman. And when she was told by her manager that she could not be promoted, that she was not going to support her, but she was going to be able to stay and keep doing what she's been doing, her sponsor said no and promoted her and moved her into another organization.
Wow, within the company.
Within the company. So you have to build relationships.
Yeah.
And that's all women.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. I think it's interesting because I hope that we've gotten past the sort of 1980s shoulder pad season of women in the workplace seeing other women as competition. And I think in the last 10 years or so, we've really started to see that collaboration over competition benefits us all, right? Shine theory, lifting as we climb, hopefully replacing that former competition. Not that a little bit of, you know, healthy competition isn't a bad thing, but I love the reminder that rarely does any leader kind of navigate that ascendancy on their own, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I think your listeners, all the women in the Bossed Up community, I think they have that message. And I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but we still have a lot of women, you know, in the sisterhood who have a mentality of survival of the fittest. They are, you know, self-preservation. There's not enough room for all of us, so I need to preserve my space. But I don't think we can get to the place where we see more women in leadership if women are not supporting one another actively, openly, and vocally in the workplace. Yes.
Well said. Well said. Let's amplify that message right there.
Exactly.
I love it. So what would you say to the woman who is down for leadership in theory? She's like, yeah, I think I have what it takes to be a leader. But her comfort zone is continuing to excel and doing what she does well. And so maybe your comments around like doing good work, right? Performance is not enough, can strike her as pretty shocking. And what do you mean? I thought if I just work hard, I'll get ahead. What does that next step look like, right? What is getting past the comfort zone of perfecting, performing, and pleasing to actually shake things up and be more innovative, be more visionary? What does that process look like? Because I've worked with so many women who don't know what we don't know, right? We're not sure what it looks like to do something different because we've been so conditioned to perfect, perform, and please.
Yeah. I always think something, it seems very elementary, but if you're starting to have these thoughts and you know, okay, this is probably maybe 8 to 12 months out before I make a move, I think it's important to socialize it. One, socialize what your goals are, socialize the vision of, you know, how you want to contribute to the organization in a different way that creates more valuable and more visibility for yourself. And you can socialize that by just talking to people in your organization and asking them, like, how did you transition out of the tactical work into things that are a little bit more operational, a little bit more strategic? You know, how did you eventually get to a place where, you know, when you looked at your work cycle breakdown, that there was less tactical things on there? Did you become more comfortable with the less tactical at parts of your particular role? So I think that's one of the ways to make that happen. And don't be scared. Because you don't want to say, eventually you won't want to stay there because it's going to definitely be impacted in your compensation. And title, I think, is important. But then how you grow, right? The skills that you build. So I think it's really important to move. You got to move forward.
I want to talk about tactical for a second because that's such an interesting word. And I know for a lot of the women emerging leaders who I work with, they hear getting out of tactical work and think, well, I'm a workhorse. Those people are show horses. Why would they get out of tactical work? Isn't that the value that I'm actually creating for the company is running the events or managing the clients or doing the accounting and bookkeeping? You know, when you've been taught to be a tactical tactician, for lack of a better word, right? It seems like doing something more strategic or managing others or being a leader of people, projects, and ideas seems so wishy-washy, doesn't it? It just seems so amorphous. And I think some of my tactical focused clients, the to-do list slayers, they're like, why would I want to do anything else? This is the right work to be doing. Everyone else is just a waste of time. You know what I mean? Everyone else is lazy, or they're not contributing, or they're doing big picture thinking, whatever the hell that means. And mm-hmm. it's an interesting resistance to management, a resistance to strategic thinking, a resistance to leadership that I don't think is intentional, but it's present for some of my clients. I wonder if you've ever come across that.
Yeah, I have. And I think one of the challenges, what you just said was spot on. I love that. To-do list slayers.
Yeah.
I love that because it's a comfortable thing. It's something that I can actually visually see that I've done these 10 tasks today.
Right.
And I've done them error free. And they're the same 10 tasks that I do every Monday.
Right.
And I'm knocking it out the box. But organizations and companies are moving so fast. They're changing. More companies are coming online. They're expanding. And they're looking for people who can make sure that they stick around. Right. Think about companies that were around, you know, 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, that no longer exist. And they no longer exist because they kept doing the same things the same way year after year. And they failed to grow and expand and adopt new technologies and innovation. So if you think about that, if that's the case with a business, that's almost similar to the case with your role, no matter what industry you're in. And even if you're not in corporate or in business. It's the same thing if you work at the Amazon distribution center.
Right.
The way they are packaging boxes today is not the way they're going to be doing it 5 years from now. And they need people to say, hey, how can we be more efficient? How can we service our clients better? How can we satisfy even our internal stakeholders? Totally. And so that's where that comes in. Everybody has tactical work to do.
Right, right.
But you have to get to a place where you are informing what that tactical work will be. And so I always tell my clients that, right? You want to grow. And it's a great way to just grow personally. And the benefits of doing that at work, you'll see those at home too. You'll be delegating everybody at home. Like,
you know,
so in your personal life,
make your
it's
own
valuable.
SOP, your standard operating procedure of the household. I'm on the precipice of having my first child this fall. My husband and I joke about this because we both are in management roles relatively recently for the first time. And we've definitely taken a management approach to our household division of labor lately. You know, it's interesting. I think of the way you describe that as going from to-do list slayer, someone who prides himself on getting all the things done and getting them done right, to to-do list creator.
Yeah.
What should be on the to-do?
Exactly.
What should be the way we do things? How can we optimize? How can we improve? And that, you know, what's funny, and I can share from personal experience, is I went from doing all the work in my business to hiring people, to managing people, to delegating more, to being more of a manager and leader myself. It feels like you're a novice all over again. Yeah. It's a totally humbling experience.
It is.
But to be willing to grow, and I think on this like long-term path to mastering whatever craft you're in, you know, it's not just being the tactician. It's getting to the level where you've learned the rules of the game. So now you can teach other people the rules of the game and you can change the rules of the game. You can improve the rules of the game.
And, you know, there are a lot of, yes, you're 100% correct. And I will always say everybody's not designed to lead large teams.
Right.
Everybody's not going to want to do that. Or even want to develop the skills. But even as an individual contributor, and I always want to go back to that, as an individual contributor, you are still expected to be a leader in your organization and also move and be more innovative and be strategic in your thinking, how you see the industry and the profession and what direction is it going in?
Yes.
And how does that inform not only your responsibility, but what you hear when you listen to your CEO you know, share their vision, you should be able to take that high level vision and say, well, how does it apply to my cubicle here on the third floor?
Yes. Totally. And I guarantee you, even if it's nowhere in your job description, if you come to work with ideas of how things can be done better and how what you're reading in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or what you heard in your CEO's latest interview should apply to your day-to-day work, unless you're working for a micromanager who's never going to help you succeed.
Exactly.
Your boss is going to appreciate that, you know?
Yeah. Your boss and other people that you have relationships with in your organization. Because even if you do work with a micromanager, they're not the only person that can see your value and promote you.
Well, just like you illustrated in that story about your client.
One of my clients.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Last question for you.
Okay.
What do you think smart companies are doing today to retain and develop top talent, specifically women talent, because I work with a lot of women in male-dominated industries. What are companies doing when it comes to retaining and developing those women and folks of color?
I think the first thing that they're doing, and I want to talk about just women before we get into, you know, the intersectionality of the women, is I think they're being more serious and more thoughtful about designing programs that support women as their lives change so that they can stay in the workplace. And if there was never a better thing to happen to women than COVID, right? I know it was tough for women to be home and to manage kids and training if they had them. And I know it was difficult if you were single and you lived alone and you felt isolated. But I think what COVID has done is for companies to say, you know what? We could actually be more profitable if we allow people to work in an environment that works best for them. And so I think there's going to be policies that come out to support women. So I think that's the first thing. And if companies are not doing that, so if you're in HR now and you're listening or you're an executive in your organization, the policies are the number one thing to keep top women in your organization. Because if I have to go across the street to our competitor in order to be able to still manage my family and work, if that's my choice, then that's what you're going to end up losing top talent. Totally. I think the second thing is that they have to be really clear and address the biases that happen to women in the workplace, right? We're not making this up. We're not emotional. These are our real experiences. Whenever Ted overtalks me, interrupts me, or steals my idea, I have some proof points, some data points to say that this is real and other people observe it. And we need people to speak up and create workplaces that are psychologically safe for women and others and women of color to exceed. And then I think the third thing is, if every woman could get an executive coach, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a coach, I'm saying it because I wish I had a coach when I was still working in corporate and when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, moving up so fast because things happen so quickly.
Yeah.
And you have so many voices in your head. You have your parents, you have your friends, you have your mentors and your managers. And sometimes we don't even get to an opportunity to sit back and process what we really want, what we see for ourselves. And that's what the coach will allow you to do. Having this executive coach that you can bounce all these ideas off of, they can help you frame them, think through them. I think that those are three things. I know people probably thought I was going to say something else, but I think those are game changers
those are
for
great.
Women.
Absolutely.
Game changers. So, you know, the investment, that self-investment in your development and getting in programs like Bossed Up and Level Up and all the things that you offer, I think are perfect. Make that investment.
Yeah. And to the employers listening, make that investment on behalf of your,
women,
right?
That
like,
too.
You know, we're really seeing a lot of interest from the companies that we work with to do more, like you're saying. And it's such a strategic long-term business move because talent doesn't leave for nothing.
No. Nope.
You know, we leave for something.
Yeah.
So if we can figure out what that is and retain the talent you've invested in, that's a financially incentivized strategic move in addition to being the right moral thing to do, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. Well, Janine, obviously I could talk with you all day, but I got to let you go. You have so much that you've shared with us here today, and I know there are so many other wonderful places to keep up with you, including your forthcoming book and your podcast. Tell my listeners where we can learn more from you.
please stay in touch with me. You can reach me on all social media platforms except TikTok. I'm going to get on TikTok. I was on there. I have all these clients in the technology space. And they were like, I was on TikTok. And I was like, you need to get that off your phone and all of these things. So anyway, I digress. So you can connect with me at Janine K. Brown on all social media platforms. You can also connect with me on our website and sign up to get information about the upcoming book that will be out this summer. I would love to share that with your audience and have them involved in some of our events and webinars that we'll be doing to support the content. And that website is everyday-lead.com.
Beautiful. And we will put that in today's episode's show notes. Can you tell me a little bit about Before 30, the podcast?
Oh, I forgot. Thank you so much for mentioning that. So in addition to being the founder and managing director of Everyday Lead, I am also a co-host on a podcast called Before 30. And in that podcast, it is me and my co-host, Nephew Trey, and I am Auntie Janine. And we are talking about all things life, career, money, entrepreneurship, travel for the Before 30 adults.
Awesome. I love that so much. Links will be in today's show notes. Janine, thank you so much. I hope this is not the last time we talk because this has been such a pleasure.
I look forward to talking with you again and being in front of your audience and sharing more. Awesome. I love women who are in leadership, and I am definitely an ally, a supporter, and a cheerleader.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And now it's time for this week's Boss Move of the Week. Today, I'm celebrating Christy in Dallas, who is a current member of our Level Up Leadership Accelerator. She's making all kinds of boss moves lately. She started the program after being let go from her education technology position of 19 years. Now, she was determined to sharpen her management and leadership skills as she continued her job search after being a people manager for many years, but never quite feeling like she had the formal training she needed to take her leadership to the next level. That's really why she joined us at Level Up. Now, just 3 months into the six-month program, Christy finds herself in a totally different environment. She's been hired on specifically as a change leader, so a leader who's been hired to really transform her new department at a totally new ed tech company. There, she's been able to implement everything she's been learning with us at Level Up in real time, starting with creating a new strategic plan for the departments and direct reports that she oversees. So talk about being a visionary leader, like we talked about with Janine today. Christy is a boss on the move, making change and transforming her new company already. So congrats to you, Christy, on this major achievement and on the impact you're already having. It's so delightful to work alongside you in the Level Up program. If you or someone you know is looking to sharpen their leadership or management skills and maybe doesn't want to go get an MBA, Bossed Up's Level Up Leadership Accelerator is the right program for you. You can learn more about it at bossedup.org/levelup or just chat with me or Kirby on our sales and marketing team anytime to get feedback on your particular goals, your particular career path thus far, and whether or not Level Up would help you get to that next step. And now I want to hear from you. If you've got a boss move that you want to share to celebrate your success or a career conundrum you want me to break down with an expert guest in an upcoming podcast, we are lining up a ton of podcast interviews right now so that you will have plenty to listen to when I am eventually out of office. Around the arrival of my first little one this fall. So keep those career conundrums coming by calling them into the Bossed Up Podcast hotline at 910-668-BOSS or 2677. That's 910-668-BOSS or 2677. You can also send a voice memo to info@bossedup.org. If you found my conversation with Janine today helpful, share it online, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, wherever you know the women in your world need to hear her message. She dropped so many gems here today. I hope you take the time to really amplify Janine's voice by amplifying who's listening to this podcast. I so appreciate you. Let's get out there and keep bossing in pursuit of our purpose. And together, let's lift as we climb.
let's face it, speaking up at work can be really hard to do, especially for women and women of color. When the stakes are high and you've already worked so hard to just be the only woman in the room, and you want to get everything right, you want to have all your facts and figures accurate before making your voice heard, it's just so much easier to stay silent instead. Researcher Deb Chahansky calls this loss of voice phenomenon, and it actually emerges in adolescent women at greater rates than men, and it sticks with us for the rest of our lives. Self-silencing behavior can actually become an unconscious habit unless we consciously engage in practicing our assertive communication skills. And we here at Bossed Up have set out to help women like you do just that. Speak Up, my live assertive communication course, is back open for enrollment, and we're kicking off a new cohort launching this June. Over the course of 8 life-changing weeks, you'll have access to interactive online curriculum and live weekly practice sessions where you, Irene, and I, and a cohort of fellow Speak Up bosses who are owning their voice, overcoming the social messages that have taught us to keep silent, and really learning to strategically and assertively communicate when it matters most, will actually have the practice time to rewire our brains, create new neural pathways, and build better habits when it comes to speaking up with confidence and precision and assertively communicating in the workplace. Learn more and enroll today to secure your spot at bossedup.org/speakup. That's bossedup.org/speakup.